Well, welcome everyone, and welcome to WA This Week, which is my weekly wrap-up of politics in Parliament, politics in the state of Western Australia, and certainly been a fascinating week and a historic week in Western Australia. It covered a range of areas in Parliament this week, and perhaps the first and most important area I'll cover is the state government's so-called electoral reform legislation. This is legislation that is going to fundamentally disenfranchise all regional people in Western Australia, from the very north of the state, from Kununurra, all the way to Esperance, in the great majority of the area of the state. Now, the Labor Party actually has the majority of upper house members in the regional areas this following the last election. If those members voted against that legislation, it couldn't pass Parliament. I find it dumbfounding that members who were elected by people who thought those Labor MLCs thought that they supported them and supported regional Western Australia, that those members wouldn't say a word. They were abandoned. Regional people were abandoned by those members. What a disgrace. But what it really highlights is just the ruthless control that Mark McGowan and the factions in the Labor Party have over those members. Because we know privately some of those members do have concerns about that legislation. We have a Labor Party with complete control of Parliament. They're using that control ruthlessly. We've got a Premier who cannot brook a single word of criticism, cannot even brook a question. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. That Premier is dictating to those members what they'll do, and they are falling in line. It is a sad week for democracy in Western Australia, but a tragedy for regional voters in Western Australia. So that bill will go through as a reading in the lower house, or at least as a message to the lower house, and then that's going to be the law. Regional voters in Western Australia will be effectively completely disenfranchised from having an impact on electing upper house members. That's a tragedy for everyone in the state of Western Australia. While we're talking about interesting topics, this week we had a debate, and I led a debate in the chamber on the demise of the forest industry. Now, some of you may be aware, some of you may not be aware. In fact, I suspect most aren't. But the Labor government in Western Australia have completely shut down forestry in the native forest in the southwest of Western Australia. Now, some people may see that and say, well, they think that's a good thing generally because, you know, they don't want to see logging in the native forest. But that is, in fact, a dreadful decision for the state of Western Australia, but particularly for those regional communities. It's a very large employer. That industry generates work for about 1,500 people in the southwest of Western Australia. Their families, small businesses, it's a substantial contributor to the domestic economy in the southwest of the state, many hundreds of millions of dollars. And this is in the context of an industry that only has access to one third of the state forest. So two thirds of the state forest, logging's completely banned. Now, I know that people are concerned about old growth. All of the old growth forest is banned from logging. There is no logging allowed in any old growth forest. So it's only one third of the forest. And it's a really interesting topic. And it was fascinating to me that we had the Minister for Environment and also the titled Minister for Climate Action, who was completely unaware that, in fact, the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change, said that the best way to ensure maximum carbon sequestration in a forest was to have managed logging. Now, the reason that that's so is a way of improving carbon sequestration, and that's reducing carbon levels in our atmospheres, is that the wood products from the forest are used for other purposes. They're used in buildings. They're used for a whole range of industries. We will be putting excerpts from my speech on this, so you can go and look at that and see some of the detail from it. But, of course, that wood lasts for hundreds of years, in fact, And that takes carbon out of the air and the forest regrows and it's recycled. And the minister was completely unaware of that. And even worse than that, and whilst this wasn't directly related to the forestry debate, this same minister was completely unaware that, in fact, Western Australia's carbon emissions have gone from around 80 million tonnes a year to 90 million tonnes a year. In fact, it's over a 12% increase in carbon emissions in the state of Western Australia since Labor was elected. If Western Australia had in fact maintained its carbon emissions, not even reduced them, the carbon emissions around the whole of Australia would have in fact gone down. So Western Australia is the state that is driving up carbon emissions from the whole of Australia. And that minister was completely unaware. And when questioned, she could not mention one word of a plan that they have to deal with climate change. So she loves to get in Parliament. She loves to get up there and criticise the federal government and attack them. And yet, as the Minister for Climate Action, she's literally doing nothing. So this is, again, a complete failure of the McGowan Labor government. And to shut down the forest industry in the southwest and say that that's going to cut carbon emissions was just complete ignorance on her part. It's shocking that someone who has such a senior portfolio would come to the conclusion that is completely in contradiction to the International Panel on Climate Change, global experts respected around the world who say that a properly managed forest industry, which Western Australia's industry was, in fact leads to a reduction in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, because there's a net removal of carbon with the harvesting of timber and then the forest regrowing. I've spoken to many people that are affected by that. These are small family businesses, overwhelmingly. These are not large conglomerates. These are small family businesses. Furthermore, another tragedy, and this is again anyone who calls themselves a supporter of proper environmental management would be aware of, we will still have hardwood products in Western Australia. There's enormous demand for hardwood timber in the state, all the way from uses in mining through to furniture, building and the like. You cannot replace Jarrah hardwood with pine. It is a fundamentally different material and a fundamentally superior material for a great range of uses. Building bridges, for example, building jetties. There is nothing superior that is a completely renewable product to use for those purposes. What will happen, and we're talking 2024, the start of 2024, effectively, all logging of hardwood will cease in that one third of the forest that they're allowed to harvest. That hardwood timber will come in from overseas. It will primarily come in from Papua New Guinea, Malaysia, and Indonesia. So this decision is going to lead to what foresters have called the importation of deforestation from other countries. And I think that's just a disgrace. So we've got a minister that is out there and saying what a wonderful thing she's done, but in fact she is going to directly lead to net environmental harm in our near neighbours. I think that's appalling. She's a minister that clearly she does not understand her brief. She does not understand her portfolio. She does not understand any of the scientific detail behind decisions that she's making. She simply makes assertions based on her own intuition, and the loser are many hundreds of people, around 1,500 people in the southwest of the state. Families are going to lose their jobs. Those communities are going to lose a massive, many hundreds of millions of dollars of income into those communities, and it's going to lead to more environmental harm in our near neighbours. This is a fundamentally flawed decision. And we've got a minister for the environment who clearly has no understanding of the important matters that she's making decisions on. It's a tragedy all round for the state. I think this week I saw on the other side of the chamber, and that is in the Labor side of the chamber, the worst behaviour I have, I think, ever witnessed. I've been in Parliament now just on 4 years or 3.5 years, and I have never seen worse behaviour by the members or any members in that chamber in that time, and many of my colleagues, they've never seen worse. The shock for me, and perhaps I shouldn't have been shocked, was the two people who were responsible for that behaviour in Parliament this week were the Premier, the Honourable Mark McGowan, and the Minister for Health, the Honourable Roger Cook. They were frankly abusive in Parliament. They should be fundamentally ashamed of the way they behaved. They were screaming abuse across the chamber with no provocation other than that they were asked reasonable questions in Parliament. You know, Mark McGowan portrays himself as some leader in Australia and a leader in our community. I literally have never witnessed worse behaviour in the Parliament, and we'll be providing some of that footage as well, so that members of the public can see that. It is appalling. And you ask the question, why would a Premier, this is a Premier who's enjoyed the largest electoral victory in Australian history, in fact, so has complete control of the Parliament of Western Australia, why would he do that? And it's very clear to us why he is doing that. And the reason is that he has painted himself into a corner. We have a situation in Western Australia at the moment where we are very safe. And we on the Liberal and the Nationals in the Alliance side of Parliament have supported this government every step of the way with proper controls around COVID. And COVID has been well managed. Western Australia has been able to shut its borders because we have a mining industry that is so strong. And unlike the other states, we haven't had to depend as much on our domestic economy. And that's meant that most of us haven't seen the impacts. There are some industries, particularly industries that are related to overseas and interstate tourism, they are doing it terribly tough. And they're getting no support from the state government, can I say. And I've spoken to a number of them. This is businesses that have run for decades, and now families have lost everything because of that. And we should remember that. But for most of us, our lives effectively haven't changed, and we've enjoyed good freedoms. But the Premier is so obsessed with continuing this in the face of every other state in Australia, including last week, South Australia, publishing a roadmap for what do we do beyond shutdowns. And that's really important. The reality for COVID is that COVID is likely to last for decades. And it is not something that is going to go away. It's not something that's going to be eliminated from the face of the earth anytime soon. That means that ultimately we all have to learn how to live with COVID. Now, no one wants to do that in a way that is going to cause, you know, harm and mayhem in the community and death. But the truth is, our community has to have a plan that we can cope with living in a world where COVID exists. And, you know, preeminent of that, everyone needs to be vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated and you're watching this, please go and get vaccinated. It's really, really important. But the reality is, even if people are vaccinated, they can still catch COVID. And even if they are vaccinated and they've caught COVID, some people can get seriously ill and die. The vaccination substantially reduces the likelihood of people catching COVID, and it substantially reduces the impact of the disease if people catch it. So that's why vaccination is so important. And we all know that the more vulnerable people in our community are the most susceptible, people who are immunocompromised, who can't get vaccinated, older people, people with other chronic illnesses. They're the susceptible ones. So getting vaccinated, it's not just about protecting you, it's about protecting them. But, you know, Western Australia is consistently the worst state in Australia for vaccination. And again, we have a Premier who, he loves to claim the positives of everything, but will take no responsibility whatsoever for any negative. And he won't take any responsibility for that failure around vaccination. and he simply refuses to have any intelligent conversation with the community or any conversation with the broader community about a plan to open the state. Now, we don't think on our side, no one wants to just throw the borders open and just throw caution to the wind. We've supported the government, as I've said, every step of the way in this COVID fight and this COVID battle. And we've publicly recognised the good job that the government have done in managing this to date. But now we're going through a transition. This is a time when the community as a whole has to make a decision because there are real consequences, obviously, to moving to a more normal society where there's more normal travel. And the Premier has to have the show the community the respect they deserve in engaging with that conversation. And that means him publishing the plan. And also, can I say, publishing the legal advice behind the plan, because what we constantly see is that whilst the Premier says that his views and his statements are based on medical advice, we are seeing increasingly that the medical advice is following the Premier's statements. And that's a matter of great concern to us. We have always said that we accept the medical advice of the Chief Medical Officer of the state, and we certainly respect the fantastic role that he's played. But it seems increasingly that the Premier is coming out and making statements, and then the Chief Medical Officer is subsequently having to issue supporting opinions, and that is the wrong way around. That is not the way the decision should be made. This should be a medical decision first, and then government should be making decisions based on that. And that's what we've supported all along. We don't see that now. We see increasingly the Premier and the Health Minister just making arbitrary decisions. It clearly seems that they get up and have a thought. They go out and make that statement, and then suddenly we have a scurrying around, and the health officer has to come out with a medical opinion that is supporting those opinions put out by the Premier and the Health Minister. It's the wrong way around. It's not being done the right way, and we are very concerned about that. And in relation to the whole this vaccination program, what we've recently seen is this panic from the government because the Western Australian Labor government has failed in the vaccination program. I mean, there are communities, large parts of the state, where fewer than 20% of the population are vaccinated. Because of that failure, now we've come out and all of a sudden we have this arbitrary decision around mandatory vaccination for a whole range of people. Now, again, on our side of Parliament, we've said we support mandatory vaccination where it's based on medical advice and there's a legal authority to do that. Whilst there are some people who, are concerned that government making impositions is an imposition on their rights and freedoms, we accept that there's a balance here. There's a balance between people's rights and freedoms, and then there's a balance between protecting people in our community and vulnerable people in our community. So it's entirely appropriate that there are mandated vaccination requirements for people working in certain industries. But to use mandated vaccinations simply as a way to compensate for the government's complete failure to engage the community in the vaccination program is heavy-handed and I think wrong. We have always said we support mandatory vaccination based on appropriate health advice and based on making sure that there's proper legal advice as well. And it is very, very clear that the Premier and the Health Minister are not doing that in this case. They are doing this as a tool to make up for the fact that they have failed and uniquely failed against all other governments in Australia to get enough people vaccinated, and that's a problem for all of us. So, and again, I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing these tantrums in Parliament, and that's all they can be described as from the Premier and from the Health Minister, because they are increasingly being revealed in their inability to manage this properly. Think about, when we go to open the state up and we have a roadmap, we need a hospital system that is in good shape to handle the inevitable increase in the number of people who will need some hospital help because of COVID, and that's inevitable, and you will have seen that in other states. Now, clearly you want to make sure that that's an absolute minimum, but that is an inevitable outcome of it. We've got a health system at the moment. Don't worry about a health system that can cope with COVID. We have a health system at the moment that is utterly unable to cope even with the normal level of hospital services that are required for the state. So, for example, you look at ambulance ramping hours. Now, the last month, over 5,000 hours. Now, the Minister for Health, when he was the opposition spokesperson for health, when there was 1,030 hours of ramping of ambulances outside hospitals, he described that as a crisis for the state of Western Australia. And yet he has overseen ambulance ramping hours of over 6,000 hours in a month. And whenever we query him about it, one, we get this anger, this abuse, because we would dare ask a question. But equally, we get this denial that there is any issue, any problem. Now, that ambulance ramping is on top of the fact that a large number of the hospitals in the state now are cancelling elective surgery because they cannot cope with even the base load of medical requirements coming into the hospitals. And, you know, again, sometimes people think, well, it's elective surgery. When you're talking about elective surgery, in particular for older people, there are many older people that need hip operations, they need knee operations, they need other operations that actually enable them to get out of their bed. So in the last years of their life, they're bedridden, they're house ridden, because they cannot get the surgery they need to allow them to be mobile, allow them to get out, allow them to live a dignified, independent life. And these are people, in many cases, have been waiting 2 or 3 years for surgery, and they're being told now, they're getting letters now saying, yes, I know your surgery was scheduled for, you know, next Tuesday or whenever it is, you know, in a few weeks' time, but I have to tell you, now it's been indefinitely cancelled because our hospital system cannot cope. Now, that's when we've got no COVID in the state. So this is a state government that have utterly failed to prepare the state of Western Australia for the inevitable day when our borders will be open to the other states and to overseas. They have no excuse. A government with more than $5 billion surplus, and yet they've failed not only to prepare us for the time when we will open our borders, and that will be sometime in the new year, they haven't even prepared our hospital system to deal with the normal load of normal surgery and other medical procedures that get carried out in this state. So it's a health minister, a part-time health minister, and a premier who have failed completely in one of the most important areas, and that is ensuring that the health of Western Australians is looked after. Look, unfortunately, there are just too many topics to cover in one short program, and certainly some other areas that have come up this week and otherwise I would like to cover, but we'll have an opportunity to get to some of that next week. But I would like to thank all of you who have persisted to the end and listened to the broadcast for doing that. And if you do want to sort of keep up with this, then you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, and that's at Dr. David Honey. And you can get the latest episodes of this show every week. And otherwise, you can search WA This Week on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and I will give you a weekly update on the issues. And look, give us feedback. If there are topics you want me to talk about, then let me know, and happy to cover those in future podcasts. Thank you.